And this is WHCC in Holland Time now for Talk of the Town, the program in which you, the listeners, participate with your telephone calls. Our guest on Talk of the Town this morning is the Senator, and if you would like to talk to him this morning, our number is 395-1450, and that is Senator Arlen Meekhoff. Good morning, Arlen.
Good morning, Duke, and listeners. Appreciate being on today.
Well, you weren't on last week because the veterans took it over.
Yeah, last week was my normally scheduled day to be on, but obviously deferred to the veterans. It's a very important day. I think when we look back for an appreciation of our freedoms, it's the least we can do to honor our veterans. Those are folks that gave a blank check to this U.S. government, said, use me wherever you want, up into including my life, to defend the freedom and liberties of this country. And one day a year probably isn't enough to honor them, but at least I took part in several celebrations throughout the county and different things. Was very proud to do so on behalf of veterans and in my office. It's grateful to talk to many, many members of what we would call the greatest generation, many of whom we are rapidly losing because of their age.
That's right. We're a little feeble now.
And we are grateful. And some of the numbers I was told, we had our nation in the World War II was somewhere around 30 million people generally as a total population. We had 13 million people in uniform. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
And so hence the stories about Rosie the Riveter and the women who took over in the factories and did a lot of different things because the machinery of war had to be built and used. And so we are grateful for anybody who served in any capacity. If you fought on the front lines or you worked in the mess hall or you were a mechanic or transport, anything that you did in defense of liberty of this country, we say thank you.
Yeah. And the amazing thing was the company was united. The whole country was united.
The whole country was united, that's right.
And we have a call coming in. Good morning, you're online with the Senator.
Yes, good morning.
Morning.
First of all, Senator, thank you for the great job you do representing us.
Thank you.
My question is this. Help me understand this whole dark money issue that was written up in one of the Detroit papers Friday that evidently it was one of your bills that wanted to block the transparency so we would all know, especially from third parties, the contributions that were going to influence elections. Why wouldn't we want to know who, in fact, is trying to control or, influence the outcome of elections? Why did you take the stand that you did? And
sure.
Quite frankly, I think it was against what even the Secretary of State was looking for in more transparency.
Sure. I that's a great question because the term dark money is not an appropriate term because what is going on here, we have a Citizens United case, and then this also goes back into the 50s during the segregation era when the NAACP was being asked or was asked to be required to give up their membership list and people who had contributed toward their education foundation and education advocacy, issue advocacy. And the courts ruled that they did not have to give up their membership list, that as long as they did it in a legal way, contributing towards issue advocacy and educating the public, that was legal. Citizens United has affirmed that case and said that money, and the U.S. and the Supreme Court has affirmed it as well, saying that money is free speech. And if you belong to an organization that has does issue advocacy, and I'll just pick on a couple from our area. Let's just say Right to Life. Right to Life, you donate to the Education Fund, and you want their issue advocacy to be going forward. You are not required to disclose who gave that money because they would be subject to harassment. And the way I review this is just the same thing almost happened, or did happen, excuse me, in California under Proposition 8 and gay marriage, when people's names were given who contributed towards defeating that proposal, those folks were harassed at their business and at their home. So what this is codifying the rules that have already been in place. They're no different than they have been before. If you're going to contribute toward issue advocacy of any sort, it's free speech. Money is free speech. It's protected free speech. As long as you're within the bounds of the law and don't say vote for or vote against somebody, you are free to do those things and you're free to associate. So those are privacy rights, again, affirmed in Citizen Action. The other parts of the campaign finance bill were moved towards transparency in terms of what people can give to me for campaigning. We said that we have to report three additional times in the off election years, and we've increased the contribution limits there. So I think when the Detroit News, or whichever one it was that did the article, I didn't read it, but I was briefed on it briefly. It's very disingenuous because anybody who has issue advocacy, I mean anybody, I don't mean if you're on the right or you're on the left or you're in the center, anybody who has issue advocacy and wants to educate the public should be able to give money towards that opportunity and not have their names revealed for fear of, and being pressured because of their belief in that particular education issue. And that's why we did what we did.
Okay, Alan, thank you. That helps me a lot. I guess my only question then would be, does the organization have to be identified, but maybe not the individual contributors to that particular group?
Well, I think that's an interesting twist to it. I don't know. But again, if you're educating the public and you're within the law, I understand your point.
The NEA or whoever it is have to be identified, maybe not for individual contributors. I understand that part of it. But the organization itself will be identified under this legislation as to trying to influence whatever the issue is. Am I right?
They are allowed to educate the public on an issue, correct. And so your contention is the organization that's doing it, be it Right to Life or NRA or NAACP, they should be identified? Is that your point?
That's what my question is.
Okay.
Will that still be the case?
Well, if it's on, you will be able to find out who paid for the ad, that's for sure.
Okay, then I think the answer is yes.
Yeah. Okay.
If it's Right to Life or the MEA or County Association of Roads, whatever, we're going to know who is campaigning for a particular issue. Maybe not the individual contributors who gave them the money, but the organization, correct?
Yeah. Typically now those things are, there's some disclaimer at the end says paid for by citizens, blah, blah, blah. It'll be the same as it always has been.
Okay. I thank you for your help, and again, thanks for your service.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning. You're online with the senator.
Good morning, Senator. I am in favor of passing Senate Bill number 2, which is giving midwives, nurse practitioners, clinical nurses more latitude in doing their job. I'd like to know what your feeling is on that bill.
Yeah, on this, I don't know if it was Wednesday or Thursday, we passed that bill out of the Senate. I voted yes. And to broaden the perspective a little bit, this doesn't say that they can hang out a shingle and be their own nurse practitioner separate business. It simply says they're allowed to practice within their scope of practice is a little bit larger. And I think this is acutely important given the fact that we have a shortage of primary care physicians. So these are folks that can help identify and sort through a lot of things before a person actually has to see a physician. And the physicians aren't necessarily, there are some that are against it, there are some that are for it. Most of them work in a collaborative practice anyway to be able to see that many people and diagnose what's going on and help them. They need more than just the doctor's time to be able to diagnose. So it simply gives them more latitude. So I voted yes. It went over to the House, and I don't know the fate of it there, but I understand they'll be taking up rather soon, probably the first week of December.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And we'll be right back after this word.
I'm Dustin. Call 800-477-5050 or visit consumersenergy.com. And remember, stay away, stay alive. Consumers Energy, count on us.
We're here with Senator Makoff this morning, and if you have a question, you may call us at 395-1450. All right, have a few other things to talk about here. One of them is the license plates.
Yeah. I mentioned last time I was on the program, we were, the bill number escapes me, but it'll come to me as I'm talking, probably, from Representative Wayne Schmidt. This simply says that we are going to look at technology in a way to be more proactive in the way we make license plates, how we distribute license plates. Right now, they're all stamped. You all know what the
right
ones are in the back of your car right now, and they're made out of aluminum, and sometimes they corrode, sometimes they... So over a 10-year period, a lot of them have problems. They're corroded, can't be read. There's other iterations of it. We have warehouses, I shouldn't say warehouses, plural, but we have a lot of other plates that we stamped to make sure that we can cover when mm-hmm. people are getting new cars and doing different things and all kinds of different stuff. What we're simply saying is this this technology will now allow us to print on vinyl, something pretty sturdy, your license plate with your specific information on it. Okay, so you want the same license plate number for the rest of your life? You can do that.
Yeah.
It costs you, I think, over 10 years. If you have to, your plate has to be turned in every 10 years, and you'll be able to get this right at the Secretary of State's office instead of mm-hmm. something out stamped and warehoused and try to plan for some contingency of how many people possibly would use it. We'll make it right at the Secretary of State's office. So I believe you'll be able to make your personalized plates. You'll be able to have the plate that you're having right now, the plate number, excuse me, And therefore, over some 10-year period of time, we'll use technology to help improve the readability of license plates and the productivity of the Secretary of State's office in issuing them. And I think we should make every effort to use the technology that comes in front of us to improve efficiencies in our state government.
Yeah, so I won't have that little pile of stickers on one corner.
You won't have a little pile of stickers on one corner. That's right. So I think, and I don't know how that's going to be updated during the 10-year part of it. I didn't read that section of the bill, but I believe this is going to make it much easier for you. It's also, and law enforcement is big on this because they're trying to read corroded license plates. They gave us some pretty good examples. It was very interesting testimony from some of the other folks that think this is a very, very good idea. And again, it's just trying to modernize, do things the way that a normal business would do things, take advantage of technology to improve efficiencies.
All right. Very good. All right. What else we have going on this applies to you?
I think it was last week or the week before I talked with Gary Stevens, news director here, and it was on the new committee in which I've been assigned, Committee on Compliance and Accountability. It's a new committee for the Senate, and the majority leader asked me to be the chairman. And it arose because we've understood that there's a significant misunderstanding about some of the laws that we've put in place and what the impacts are going to be or should be. And a lot of this is swirling around the right to work issue, of which was my bill as well. And it came to light because a kindergarten teacher from Coopersville School, somebody in my district, and six or seven other teachers have joined in a lawsuit to sue the MEA because the MEA is not allowing them to leave the union when they believe under the Freedom to Work Act that the tables have changed, the time has changed, and that no longer is their issue. Now, the MEA is coming up with something called the August window. They're only allowed to get out in August or something like that. And I had the committee last Wednesday, and we got testimony from several teachers who said they were never told about this particular issue. In fact, we have some testimony upcoming that will say they purposely withheld this information from teachers and members. And this is a membership association. I understand they're not going to run around and tell people how to leave. I get that.
Right.
But the contrary is also true. If you don't want to belong and you've made some remarks or you've actually done something in writing that says you don't want to belong and yet your wishes have been ignored, and then the MEA comes along and says, you know what, if you don't pay your dues, we're going to take you to court and we're going to start attaching your wages. We're going to turn it over to collections.
Uh-huh.
So that's the issue. And I would say, again, through testimony that's come forward, one of the teachers, through another person or through their, I don't know exactly which person in the union, wrote on the top of their dues form, says, does not wish to belong. I think that's almost a direct quote of what was on there. So this kindergarten teacher believed, all right, my issue's over. I'm not going to belong. I'm not going to pay dues because I told them I'm not going to. Well, that was in the spring of the year. Over the summer, no communication, no information about this coming forward. And testimony from other teachers said that was their most disappointing aspect of this whole thing. An organization that's supposed to be looking out for their best interests and informing them chose to neglect to give them this very important piece of information which has impact on their families. And they're very disappointed about that. So come into August, if this two-week window exists, I would say that it doesn't. And then subsequent to that, in September, the same teacher was approached by the union president and said, here's your e-dues form, you got to sign this so that we can take the money out of your checking account or your credit card. And she said, no, I'm not going to do that. I already told you I don't want to belong. And the person said, well, then we'll turn it over to collections and we'll get your money anyway, which is very inappropriate. Actually going into someone's classroom and challenging them with this, that's a business transaction that doesn't belong in that person's classroom. That's two. The other is, when asked for this form that the teacher apparently had indicated, or allegedly had indicated that she did not wish to attend or be a part of the MEA. A subsequent copy under Freedom of Information Act was retained, and that copy shows that those particular words, "I do not wish to belong," have been whited out. So somebody has altered a legal document, and that is concerning to me. And I think what I think the public needs to understand is, just because you don't like Freedom to Work doesn't mean it doesn't pertain to you. I don't believe after Freedom to Work that there's been anything that says freedom is only 1 month a year, and that's what the teachers would say. My freedom is ongoing since this law has been passed. Consequently, or subsequently, we found, and there's some other unions that will attest, teachers' unions as well, that they allow their teachers any time of the year to get out. All they have to say is they want to be out of the union, any time they want. So this just seems to be a thing that's unique to the MEA. And we want teachers to know if they have particular issues, and most of them have been scared all of their lives of the MEA, I don't know what portion, some of them, they feel they have to belong, and at one point it was a condition of employment. It no longer is a condition of employment, but it's also a condition that you freely associate or you don't associate, and you do that through union dues. We want those teachers to know they got a place to go. Senate Accountability and Compliance Committee, Senate Republicans have the teachers back. We're gonna provide freedom for them under the law to which they're already due, and we're going to make sure that happens for them.
Okay. Very good. Let's take a moment out for a weather word here, and the weather word today is brought to you by the Farmhouse Restaurant. Delicious, thin, and crispy cracker crust pizzas. Doesn't that sound good today? Yeah. And here's the weather. We have a temperature of 39 right now, and the forecast is for windy this up to afternoon with the rain, a mix, and snow showers. Yucky. Steady to slowly falling temperatures, and tonight clearing skies with a low of 31. Tomorrow, sunshine with a high of 46. Well, sounding a little better tomorrow. We're here with the senator this morning, and if you have a question you'd like to ask him, give us a call at 395-1450. Our line is open for you.
I wonder if most of them don't have power and aren't hearing the radio today, since we haven't had very many calls in.
That's possible, because I don't think the power's on all over yet.
Yeah, when I drove in early this morning, I saw that there were sections around that folks didn't have power, so we hope that that's rectified. So, and I also know through the emergency actor, through the state, that I got an email this morning that they're activating crews from other states to come in and help with restore some electricity. So it's not that they're not working, it's just that they haven't gotten there yet, and we hope that it's short-lived. It's amazing how much we depend on convenience.
It certainly is. It certainly is. All right. What else we got there this morning, Arlen?
I also read, and I think of some interest to the listeners, during the hunting season, the wolf hunt was also introduced, and I believe they wanted to take some 40-some wolves in the upper areas of Michigan. And if I read the headline right, so far only three have been taken. There may have been more that haven't been reported yet. And I was telling you a quick story earlier, and I want to just share with your listeners. As this was being debated through the Senate and the House, there was some we were actually saying we want the DNR to determine scientifically, is there too many wolves, and then what should be done. So they determined scientifically, yes, there are too many wolves based on predation and what's going on and some other incidents involving humans and so on. And so, excuse me, the issue was made that we're going to have a hunt. But prior to that, a number of groups evidently put our numbers out, and they called into our offices and were imploring us not to do anything about the wolves. Don't kill the wolves. Don't harm them in any way and things like that. So a particular senator from the east side of the state had a call from one of his constituents in Oakland County, and the person was very adamant about making sure you don't do anything to the wolves. And the senator said, well, we haven't determined yet through the DNR if we're going to hunt or trap or whatever it is we're going to do. Maybe we'll just trap them and re-release them. And the lady said, well, that's terrific. I really want to protect those wolves and do everything we can to do that. And she said, well, where would you re-release them? And the senator said to her, well, where do you live?
Yeah.
Now, it's a different issue when that is in your backyard. So I want your listeners to understand, even though it doesn't impact Ottawa County, it has lots of impact for other parts of the state.
I have another call here. Good morning. You're online with the senator. Hello. Well, I guess they didn't stay with us. Hello, you're on with the senator.
Yeah, I hate to bring up that MEA thing again, because it's been beat around. But a couple of questions for you. One, the date to sign up that has been given often, and I think in most cases that date is not set by the MEA or the whatever local it is, but it's set by the school boards who and the main office who have to have a date to for financial handling of things like that. Secondly, I don't know how I stand on the right to work laws, but I do know it seems to me unfair that you can drop out and still take advantage of all the things that the union negotiates for you. I don't understand the fairness of that. It sounds like a free ride to me. How do you handle that?
Great questions. First, as for should there be a date? Yeah, there is. I was a school board president. And my understanding was the rule that we needed to make sure that we could plan was we needed to know before the teachers went on spring break if they were going to sign their contract or not. So not August, because then we would have to scramble to get another teacher. We'd needed to know in April. So I would think that if the school board was going to set it, that same rule would have been set some sort of time in the April time frame when they also had to be given notice. I think that still exists. I haven't been a school board member for a while. And then your assertion about right to work and it being a free ride, you know, I think I would say it the other way around. There was a lot of people that were forced to ride. They were forced to ride as a condition of employment. Now, if you really want to change that, we have to go to Washington, D.C. and abolish Rule 9. And Rule 9 simply says that when you are the bargaining unit for a particular set of people, you have exclusive rights to bargain for those people. Why don't we strike that rule and allow as many unions as want to compete with those people and make it a marketing issue? Why not let the market rule on that? So I think your analogy is not correct, and I would say, again, the freedom to associate or not associate shouldn't be contingent on if you pay a third party to work at that place. I think that's inherent in the way we should do business. It's inherent in the way we should practice as Americans, and I don't agree with you at all, sir, on your assertion, but I would hope that when this opportunity comes up, that you would go with me to Washington, D.C. and lobby, and I do mean lobby, to get this Rule 9 taken out so that they don't have exclusivity, that any union can compete, that the MEA has to compete with the American Federation of Teachers for the right to represent the teachers at West Ottawa or Zeeland or Hudsonville, wherever that would be. Now they have exclusive rights. So I think that is where it's unfair. Not in the fact that they don't wish to belong. They can belong to anything they want. They simply have the freedom not to belong at this point as well. And if they think a union is the right way to represent their interests, then they should get the best one that they can.
Mm-hmm. I know I have talked to a lot of teachers that were not happy that they had to belong to the MEA.
Yeah, and many of them will be very, very silent about it because they know they'd be subject to harassment, as in a couple of school district instances where we've been given information that the teachers that have left the union, their names were printed on a very large sheet of paper and hung in the teacher's lounge for some sort of harassment. These are people that no longer wish to belong, or I don't know exactly what the terminology was. Again, as I went back to campaign finance and the issue advocacy money, because you belong to a particular group or you don't wish to belong to a particular group, you shouldn't be subject to harassment for your personal beliefs.
Right.
And that's what's going on here. And that's the freedom that we have as Americans. And I think I'll do everything in my power to uphold that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the Senate is not, are they meeting this week? Or?
No, we're on our in-district work period right now. We'll be back a couple of weeks in December. And then back again in January when we'll begin the budget process all over again. And I do have to say that the state revenues are looking pretty good. It's a rosier outlook again. I don't think the House and Fiscal Agency agree yet on what the numbers are going to be, but we'll probably close the budget year with probably $300 million more. And the revenues are up another $200 million. So I'm not saying that there's $500 million to spend. What I'm saying is as we budgeted last year, we're doing a much better job of how we're managing the expenses and how the revenues are coming in. And the state is on the uptick. I mean, we are the comeback state. I agree with the governor. You know, a lot of the very difficult things that we had to do, which we had to vote and change, people didn't like. I didn't like them all either. But they were necessary to turn our state in a direction to make sure it grows. And some of those indicators are the amount of cranes that you're seeing in the air where construction is happening, where capital is flowing freely. If you look up on the medical mile in Grand Rapids, all of that went on recently, you're just seeing confidence being built. Mm-hmm. And I think the confidence in Michigan is resurging. Our bond rating, by which we borrow money if we need to as a state, is continuing to get better and better and better. So that isn't costing us a lot of money to borrow money. We actually now have cash in our savings account. We went from $1.8 billion deficit to $600 million in our bank. So we don't have to go out and borrow money for short-term things. At one time, we had enough money in there to run the government for about 20 minutes. That's how much we had in our savings account. Now we have $600 million in there. We're putting the balance sheet in a great direction. Site Selection Magazine, the group that actually advises people where they should locate their business to expand and grow, we've never been considered in the last two decades on that list. And now we're number two. That tells you that people are looking at Michigan because it's the place to be.
Maybe we should invite Congress in to look it over.
Yeah, the governor says that often, that the Congress could take a lesson from the state of Michigan. And I'm very proud to serve with this governor. He's really doing a great job, and I think that moving forward, I think he'll be very successful in his next election and move Michigan even further so that my kids and grandkids, your kids and your grandkids, will live and work in Michigan because it's their best opportunity in the whole United States,
right.
And we want them here.
All right. Anything else? I've got about 30 seconds left.
Hunters, be safe out there. I don't know if you're going to be out today, but those of you who are in the woods, make sure you're wearing your orange. Do the things that you need to do to be safe, because we want you to be able to enjoy hunting with your kids and so on next year as well. So thanks, Juke.